toward his Huragak colleagues. "The Office of Naval Intelligence gave us a vital mission," I told him. "We need a Huragak to help us with it, but we only need one." I eyed the others as they jabbered away with Virgil. "Honestly, it's a dangerous assignment. The rest of you would be better off hunkering down here and waiting for the cavalry to arrive." I wasn't entirely sure that was true. After all, I didn't know if there was even a cavalry out there anymore. "Where is everyone else?" Romeo asked, peering around the room. "He means the humans," I said to Virgil. "There had to be some humans stationed here with you, right?"
"They are gone," Virgil said. "A detachment of armigers came here to take them away soon after the power was shut off. We hid in the vents so they could not find us, but the humans all went with them."
"Great. Yet another mid-mission diversion. The last one nearly got us killed. We don't have the kind of team we'd need here to help them."
"But you must." Virgil's synthesized voice took on a new intensity. "Otherwise, I cannot go with you or anyone else."
"That's not an option for him, Buck," Veronica said in my helmet. I was pretty sure Virgil couldn't hear her, although with a technologically advanced whiz like a Huragak, it was hard to be sure.
"We can't let him stay here. You're authorized to take him by force if necessary. Just don't hurt him."
"That doesn't seem like a great option to me," I responded. I looked at Virgil. "So you're not going to make this easy on us?"
"You are correct," Virgil said. "You could force me to accompany you. I cannot physically prevent you from accomplishing that. However, if you compel me to join you, I will not lend you the aid you require."
"Of course not." I tilted my helmet visor straight into Virgil's many eyes. "Exactly what are you insisting we do? We only have the two of us here. How many armigers are there?" Armiger was the formal term used for any defensive combat robot, and it was just like a Huragak to use it. Forerunner soldiers had a variety of sizes and shapes, but all armigers were designed explicitly to engage threats. The machines had probably come here for the Huragak, but had left with the humans when they couldn't find them.
"They have Sadie," Virgil said. "You must save Sadie."
"Of course they did. Damn it." Sadie Indisha was the daughter of the man who'd designed the AI running most of the infrastructure of New Mombasa. Being a single, overworked father who didn't spend enough time with his child, he'd come up with a solution that he figured would compensate for parental neglect. He'd programmed the AI to keep a special eye on Sadie and make sure she was kept safe. When Quick to Adjust was trying to escape from the Covenant during the invasion of New Mombasa, the Huragak worked to repair that AI in order to prop the city up long enough to escape. As part of that, he mentally merged with the subroutine that watched over Sadie, a subroutine Sadie's father had nicknamed Virgil. It's beyond me how it all worked. I just know it did, and because of that, the new Virgil had developed a strong attachment to a girl he'd never met. After the war, he'd insisted on finding her, and the UNSC, in its infinite wisdom, had decided to offer Sadie the job of being Virgil's handler. Their attachment had only grown deeper over the intervening years. Virgil watched over her like her father would have wanted, and I think Sadie found Virgil's presence comforting after losing her dad in the invasion. A Huragak makes an odd substitute for a human parent, sure. But you go with what you've got. So when Virgil said he wasn't going anywhere without Sadie, I absolutely believed him.
"Oh, come on," Romeo said. "Can't we just drag his fat floating carcass into the Condor?"
"You heard him," I said, dismissing the idea with a wave of my hand. "We can bring him along, but we can't make him help us. And you know we need his help. That's the only reason we're here."
"So now we gotta go find Sadie? In the middle of all this? Hey, don't think of it as a rescue mission. Think of it as your chance to put some bullets into some Forerunner soldiers."
"You always know what to say to cheer a guy up, Buck." I patted Virgil on his side. "All right, buddy," I told the Huragak. "We'll go save Sadie and anyone else we can manage to help along the way. But once we've done that,
You need to help us. To come with us. Understand? I will be happy to do so. That means with or without Sadie. I couldn't let her have any say in this. If she wants to tag along, fine. The more the merrier. But if she's not up for the trip, you still have to come with us. You will make sure she is safe first, Buck.
Of course.
Then we have a bargain, Virgil said. For a moment, I thought he was going to stick out a tentacle for me to shake and make it uncomfortably weird. But he didn't, and for that I was grateful.
Do you know where she is? I asked.
The Forerunner soldiers took her and the rest of the human staff toward the center of the facility. I do not know why, but I assume that they were going to arrange for transport off this satellite. So we need to reach them before they leave. Otherwise, we're never going to catch up with them.
Correct.
How long ago did this happen?
2 hours, 43 minutes, and 30 seconds ago, at the mark.
Mark. They were gathered from throughout the station. Sadie was in her quarters when we lost power. She joined me here in this laboratory for the first 36 hours and 28 minutes after the incident. But she went to the mess hall from time to time to acquire sustenance. That is where she was when the Armagers entered the facility.
Nice and thorough, said Romeo. I slapped him on the shoulder. Let's move.
Before we left, though, I turned to Virgil and the rest of the Hurricock.
How did you get the lights on in here, by the way?
And the air flowing?
We repaired them.
The damage the Guardians can do is thorough, but not irreparable. It only requires time.
That was the first bit of good news I'd had in a long while, and I was curious if Oni knew that much. It was a single shining beam of hope when all else seemed pretty much lost.
All right, then. But while we're gone, I need to ask if you could repair the ship bay we entered through. You know which one I'm talking about?
Virgil nodded, and the other Hurricock followed suit, bobbing their heads in unison.
Captain Veronica Dare is out there in a condor waiting for us, I said. You remember her, and there's no oxygen in the bay. Romeo and I have our armor, but you and Sadie...
Virgil bounced his head up and down.
I understand. We will make repairs immediately. You must go and find Sadie now. And please, hurry.
I glanced at Romeo and jerked my head toward the door.
We got our marching orders, pal. Let's get the job done.
Chapter 7
Veronica, I said as Romeo and I headed back into the darkened portions of the Daedalus complex. You get all that? Virgil put his tentacles down to force you to go rescue Sadie.
It's the right thing to do.
Yeah, we've been doing a lot of that lately. It didn't go so great last time, you might recall.
Let's figure out where you need to go, she said, failing to disagree with me. A map of the complex popped up on my HUD. Romeo and I were depicted as greenish arrows in the southern part of the structure, and corridors snaked off north of us, along with all sorts of other passages from around the area. They converged on a large open space that seemed to sit in the middle of the crater.
What's that in the center? I asked. That large hollow spot.
It's the original landing pad for the ships that built this place, Veronica said. They stationed it in the center of the crater and constructed everything around it. When they were done, the ships departed and they left that area open.
Why would they do that? Romeo asked.
You never know when you're going to have to rebuild, Veronica said, today being a case in point. If the complex survives, the residents are going to have a lot of work ahead of them to get this place back into shape.
Uh-huh, I said.
It would also be the perfect place to station a guardian.
I headed off in that direction, and Romeo pattered along behind.
Why would Cortana want to do that? Romeo asked, irritated.
Once she figures out she has a blind spot up here, it makes perfect sense.
Daedalus is right in the center of the far side of the moon. She could position a guardian right here, and it would watch over nearly the entire hemisphere. Plus, it could look for incoming activity from deep space.
But she hasn't done that yet, Veronica said, her voice as calm as ever.
I have visual on the area. It's clear.
Maybe she's too busy with Earth at the moment. Maybe she has other colonies to worry about. Maybe she just doesn't care enough about this side of the moon to bother with it.
But she sent Forerunner soldiers here, Veronica said. That's my point. She's aware of this place, and she knows there are humans up here. If she's smart, and we know she is, she's keeping a special eye peeled for every Huragok she can locate. So she's going to find her way here sooner or later, said Romeo. Let's hope it's later. You know how fast an AI thinks, I said. We may already be too late. Then you'd better get moving, Veronica said. Faster than fast. Romeo and I stepped it up to a trot, rushing toward the empty spot on the map. Now that we had our bearings, the corridors felt much easier to navigate. The only thing that slowed us was the awareness that Armigers were there with human hostages. Once they got a whiff that we were there, it'd get dicey quickly. As we got closer, Veronica chimed in. I think I spotted something, she said. I'm flying recon overhead, and I see some lights in an observation deck area close to your position. Is that safe? I asked. Shouldn't you be keeping more to the shadows? You're stomping through the halls down there, trying to find an entire force of Forerunner soldiers as fast as possible, so you can try to rescue a young woman. You think my flying overhead is going to blow that? She's right, Romeo said. In fact, you should make a lot of noise, Dare. Flush them out. No, belay that, I said. He's got a point, Buck. If I can locate them and pull attention away from you two at the same time, that seems like a win. Veronica, already on my way. I'd lost the argument before it had even started. The best I could do was hustle my butt into trouble to make sure the Forerunner soldiers didn't actually catch up with Veronica while she was trying to distract them. At least hold off far enough that they can't see what kind of ship you are, I told her. The last thing we need is for them to send word back home that our outfit is bigger than a pair of Spartans. We don't want to be dealing with a Guardian. Armigers like the ones we were looking for were each less of a single machine and more like a collection of metallic bits that happened to hover near each other in a roughly humanoid shape, simultaneously tough as nails and somehow ephemeral. Didn't keep them from shooting you dead with their hard light weaponry, though. As far as I knew, these Forerunner soldiers were made of nothing more than a strange alien alloy. Vicious biped constructs that could teleport short distances in the middle of a fight, making them into full-blown nightmares. But metal still. Which meant they didn't need to breathe and could walk around in the middle of a vacuum at will. Unlike their hostages. Double time it, I barked at Romeo. Man, just because you're afraid for your girlfriend, she can take care of herself, I said, entirely aware that Veronica could hear everything I said. If those Forerunner soldiers decide to blast open the colony's atmospheric seals, we probably won't be able to say the same about Sadie and the rest of the people still hanging out here. We only need to get Sadie, Romeo said. Right? I felt like biting his head off, but Veronica stepped in before I could. Technically true. If the other people in the area seem safe, there's no reason to kick over the nest here. Keep your eyes on the prize. We're leaving with Virgil, and he's only given us the one condition. I frowned at that, but I decided to keep my opinions to myself until I had a better reason to voice them. No point in arguing about a problem we didn't have yet. We heard the soldiers before we saw them. They were, as Veronica had predicted, in an observation deck area near the center of the Oni site, and they'd already spotted her. It was a wide and tall area, probably the largest in the entire complex. We entered it at a lower level, and there was a short flight of steps up to the main area, which sat beneath a massive transparent dome made of thick, clear panels, framed with a spiderweb lattice of steel. There were all sorts of tables scattered about the place, along with chairs that leaned way back so you could recline there and watch the distant stars overhead. At first blush, it looked like a recreational area. Veronica's arrival had spurred the Forerunner soldiers into an uproar. They had clustered close to the far side of the observation window, close to the open area in the center of the complex, and farthest from us. They were literally vibrating and jumping around with an orange energy, which experience told me meant they were preparing to teleport or fight. Veronica's condor hovered a few hundred meters away at the edge of a rocky outcropping, her forward autocannons directly facing the dome. Romeo was ready to burst in and start shooting, but I signaled him to keep his powder dry while we scanned the area for Sadie. The last thing I wanted was for her to get caught in a crossfire. Well, second to last. The real last thing was that I didn't want her and everyone else there to be blown out of the room by explosive decompression after the observation windows were smashed. That seemed the most likely cause of failure at the moment. Romeo set up a defensive position near the doorway through which we'd entered while I slipped forward as silently as I could, working my way up the stairs for a better look at the rest of the observation area. That's not an easy thing to manage for a 2-meter-tall Spartan in Mjolnir armor, especially in a well-lit room. Fortunately, the metallic creatures I was sneaking up on didn't seem to hear too well. And in any case, Veronica had a sharp hold on their attention. I crept up to the railing at the back of the observation platform until I could see over the edge. There were dozens of humans scattered about the place, standing, sitting, and lying down. Folks who'd been rounded up and brought there for eventual transport to who knew where. Most of them had edged back toward the railing, which put them as far away from the distracted Forerunner soldiers as possible. Some of them were weeping, while others stared straight out into nothingness, clearly in shock from the events they'd been caught up in. I couldn't blame them. After all, they'd just borne witness to an invasion of not only their home here on Luna, but also down on distant Earth. One of the most secret and secure bases in the galaxy had been found and conquered like it was nothing. And if you didn't think that was a sign that humanity was losing the battle, I don't know what else you might need. Some of the people gathered there had probably witnessed the spacecraft bay blow out when the power went down, which must have been terrifying. They must have known the people working there at the very least. It had been awful enough to have to pick my way through that field of wreckage. I couldn't imagine having to deal with being taken captive while mourning friends. I know the only move would have been to sneak in there, snatch Sadie, and then make a break for it and run like hell before the Forerunner soldiers could stop me. Chances were good that I could have gotten away with it and achieved our mission objective. Virgil would be on the Condor, and we'd be gone. When I looked at the rest of those people, though. "What are you waiting for, Buck?" Romeo said. "New plan. We're getting everyone out of here," I said. "You really think you can manage that?" Veronica asked. "You're going to get us killed," Romeo said. I could hear an edge in his voice, but I wasn't about to change my mind. "Try again. You're a Spartan. Remember that," I replied. "Buck, listen to me," said Romeo. "All those people? You think you're going to save them. But you're playing with their lives, man. Let Cortana have them. She'll take care of them. If she wanted to kill them, they'd already be dead, right? Tell that to the thousands of people who are already dead because of this situation." "Okay. You got a point there. Fine," Romeo huffed. "If you're going to get us killed, just hurry up and do it. I can't bear this standing around crap." The worst part was that I wasn't sure Romeo was wrong. If I stood up and started shooting at the Forerunner soldiers, I was sure to put a hole in the observation panes that composed the dome. It wouldn't take much to blow out a whole section, and that wasn't going to help those people on the observation deck one bit. I didn't see a clear path. Inwardly, I cursed Virgil for sending me on this fool's errand. I inhaled deeply and braced myself to do something terribly stupid. I then realized that the lights in the observation deck were on. "Hey," I said into the comm, "they have power here." "Sharp eye, detective," Romeo said. "All the better for us to watch everyone die, right?" "No, you idiot. If they have lights, they have power. And if they have power, they should also have proper security features active in this room." "Ah," Veronica said. "Like the automated force fields that slam into place if and when the windows give way to decompression." "Exactly. And we're going to take advantage of that. Veronica, can you fly right in front of the window?" "What are you planning?" she asked. A little surprise for our Forerunner friends. "And what if those soldiers in there call a guardian down on our heads?" "Maybe they already have," Romeo said. "Cortana's probably counting on these guys to find some Hurrigok for her, and she's not going to be happy about us messing with her plans. Did you think about that?" He wasn't wrong. That was a real possibility. But leaving these people to rot with them, especially Virgil and Sadie, wasn't an option either. We'd already lost some folks on Balaho, and I was going to do everything in my power to make sure that didn't happen here. Then I guess we'll have to move fast. Veronica moved into position, now only 100 meters or so away, and I crept closer to the humans huddled against the railing at the back of the observation deck. Right where I wanted them to be, I scanned the crowd for Sadie, and spotted her right away. She'd changed quite a bit since I'd last seen her. Shorter hair, more concern around the eyes. Mostly she seemed tired and perhaps a little scared. Not that I could blame her. She also seemed concerned for the people around her, but she kept glancing back toward the entrance, as if expecting someone. Of course. She'd be looking for Virgil. We would have to do. As I emerged from the shadows in the back of the room, she saw me, and her eyes grew large with surprise. She repressed a gasp and glanced back over her shoulder at her captors. When she looked back my way, I put a finger up in front of my armor's faceplate, signaling her to remain silent. I gestured for her to find a way to hold on to the railing as tightly as she could. That seemed to confuse her a bit, but she went along with it anyhow. I reached down to my belt and put a grenade in my fist. All right, I said to Veronica. Showtime. The condor appeared in the center of the observation window, exterior lights blazing. It swept back and forth in front of the window, playing its lights off the Forerunner soldiers who renewed their buzzing with anxious energy, leveling their weapons at the spacecraft. They began teleporting back and forth in bright flashes of light, leaving afterimages of brilliant trails across my vision. It was only a matter of time before they decided to take action, whatever that might be. I moved closer and thumbed the grenade to activate it. That made an audible click, and one of the people near Sadie spun about to see what had made the noise. He was a dark-haired man with bright eyes and a curly beard, and the moment he saw me, he gasped in fear. I don't think he had any control over it. He'd had a rotten day that had stretched him straight to the breaking point. Seeing me there pushed him right past it. The Forerunner soldiers heard him loud and clear, and they spun away from the window to discover me standing there, a grenade baking off in my mitt. "Hi there," I said with a tight smile. Then I tossed the grenade over their heads. It arced high past them, behind them, toward the window, but they weren't about to just watch it land there. They whipped about with weapons high and began blasting at the grenade, hoping to knock it out of the air. They didn't have much luck. One of them hit it with a scatter shot, the Forerunner version of a shotgun, but it wasn't enough to do more than slow the grenade down. That was plenty, though, for one of the soldiers to teleport upward just a little bit and pluck the thing right out of the air. Then it clutched the grenade to its chest and sacrificed itself to save the others. While I was happy to see a Forerunner soldier blown to pieces, that wasn't exactly the result I'd been hoping for. The rest of the soldiers gaped at their fallen compatriot only for a second, before turning their weapons on me and Romeo. "Shit," I said. "This is not how I pictured this one going." "Funny," Romeo said. "This is exactly how I pictured it." "Screw you, pal." We returned fire. There were just too many of them, though. The smartest thing we could have done right then would have been to hoof it back into the corridors, where we could have funneled our opponents into a restricted field of fire, if the soldiers were foolish enough to follow us. But that would mean leaving the human captives behind, including Sadie, which would mean that Virgil would refuse to come with us, which would blow our entire mission. "We could use a little help here," I said to Veronica. "Already on it," she said. "Grab onto something. Fast!" "What the hell is that supposed to mean?" Romeo said as hard light rifle fire bounced off his armor's shields. The lights from the condor grew brighter, closer, and I instantly knew what Veronica had in mind. I charged forward, grabbed the railing in front of me, and vaulted over it. I was afraid I might wind up drawing fire toward the people standing on the deck. But that was about to become moot. "Get down!" I shouted at all the people. "Grab something solid!" Sadie looked at me in fear as I landed next to her and put my body between her and the Forerunner soldiers.
Buck, she shouted. What's going on?
Right then, Veronica opened fire on the observation deck's windows. She brought the Condor low and gimbaled the gun up at a high angle, shooting at the panes opposite the captured people inside the complex. She wasn't going to hit any humans that way, nor any of the Forerunner soldiers. But that wasn't part of the plan, anyhow. The moment her first blasts shattered a window, explosive decompression blew every one of the Forerunner soldiers right outside onto the moon's airless surface. A few tried to latch onto something anchored inside, but they couldn't manage to hold on. One by one, they went flying out through the giant hole in the dome, and they probably shot straight into space. Man, I hoped so. Despite my warning, a few of the people in the room started skidding backward toward the gap as well. The roaring wind was strong enough to lift them off their feet and haul them toward the chilly terror of the lunar terrain. "Where's the safety shield?" I shouted as I gathered Sadie like a child in my arms. With my Mjolnir armor, I was too heavy for the decompression to move me much, but I couldn't say the same for Sadie. I didn't have enough hands to help the rest of the people, though, and we were about to start losing them to space. I cast about, looking for an emergency switch, something I could slap that would make everything better. Under normal circumstances, a military site set in an airless environment had mandatory safety systems set to kick in automatically in the case of a breach. I'd been depending on that happening fast enough to save the humans in the room, but not to help the Forerunner soldiers. Now that our enemies were all outside, the safety measures still hadn't activated, and I was starting to panic. I looked toward the door Romeo and I had entered through. If I moved fast, I might be able to save at least Sadie. If she didn't suffocate to death while I cycled the damn airlock. Then, the safety shields finally went live. Blue light force fields dropped into place over the massive hole Veronica had knocked into the glass, and the horrible wind stopped. Some of the people who'd been lifted into the air dropped down and hit the deck hard. While it might have hurt, landing like that was a far sight better than facing frozen death at the bottom of a lunar crater. We didn't have any time to check on them, though, or to congratulate ourselves on a plan that hadn't gone horrifically bad. We had to get moving before the Forerunner soldiers called in their big guns. These guys were enough of a pain, but I didn't want to have to deal with a fleet of Phaetons or even a Guardian showing up. That would mean our complete and utter destruction. The op would be over, along with potentially humanity's last hope. "Where are you taking me?" Sadie said as I carried her out of the room, cradled like a baby, back the way we'd come. Romeo had held the door for us, and now he was covering my back again. "We need to get out of here," I told her, "fast as we can." "And how do you propose we manage that?" "That Condor you saw outside? That's our ride. We just need to make another stop before we meet up with it." She let out a soft gasp, almost inaudibly. I might have thought she was just trying to catch her breath after having her lungs almost ripped out of her body.
"You're here for Virgil, aren't you?"
"I'm sorry that seems to be the only reason we ever happened to meet," I said. "But yeah, we need his help on a mission, and he refused to come with us unless we brought you along too." She cringed at that.
"He was always such an idiot.
He cared about you."
"I was talking about my father," she said.
"So was I. The man might have been long gone, one of the millions of casualties during the Covenant's invasion of Earth. But he'd done one hell of a job protecting his daughter, whether he'd meant to or not. I mean, there's no way he could have planned for Quick to Adjust to become permanently attached to Sadie because of the specific AI subroutine he'd built. But wow, that was one lucky dad." I stomped ahead at full speed. I had no idea how long it would take those Forerunner soldiers to get back inside the complex, or if they had assistance they could call in to go after us. The sooner we put Luna in the dust behind us, the better.
"What about the rest of the people here?" Sadie said.
"Are we just going to abandon them?" I shrugged. "They're not any worse off than they were before." Or so I hoped. "Except we pissed off their captors," Romeo said. I felt bad about that, but I didn't see what we could do about it. If we got wrapped up here much longer, we'd blow our mission for sure. When we reached the room where Virgil and the other Hurragach had been camped out, the alien creature was there waiting for us. The other Hurragach had disappeared. Okay, that's my part of the bargain. You ready? I asked him. I have restored power to the nearest ship bay. The atmospheric pressure in there is rising rapidly and should already be tolerable. I glanced around the empty room as I set Sadie back on her feet. And where are the rest of you guys? The others have set up a safe house beneath the facility and have already moved into it, Virgil said. Their primary objective at the moment is to not fall into the hands of Cortana and her forces. Once you discovered us, they decided it prudent to be somewhere else. He moved directly to Sadie and put his tentacles on her shoulders in an odd embrace. She leaned into it, clearly happy to be reunited with him. Is that somewhere the rest of the staff here could join them? She asked Virgil. The Hurragach bobbed up and down. I have already sent them instructions on how to meet up with the others. By my calculations, they should reach safety well before the Armagers are able to re-enter the facility. And you waited here for me, Sadie said. The Hurragach caressed her cheek with the tentacle. Of course. Hate to break up this tearful reunion, Romeo said, but we need to move. Veronica should be waiting for us in the bay, I told Virgil and Sadie as I motioned them out the door. The way to the bay was clear, and there weren't any Forerunner soldiers waiting for us. Just the Condor, ready to blast out of the moon base as soon as possible. I was relieved, given all the things that had gone sideways already. And this time, we'd actually saved some lives and hopefully brought them somewhere they could hunker down until the storm passed. That is, if the storm passed. We all piled in via the ramp. As soon as the door was sealed, I smacked the bulkhead twice and Veronica throttled forward through the force field. We rocketed out of the crater at top speed, not slowing down until reaching the relative safety of slipspace once more. Chapter 8. You're kidding me. That was my immediate reaction to Veronica when she announced where we were headed next. Afraid not, she said. That's where they've been holding Mickey since Talitza. So for 3 years, he's been in the brig of the Spartan IV training station. The same place we trained before deployment. That's the official story. Romeo threw up his hands. Who really knows for sure? Veronica flashed him a tight Oni grin that told him, oh, I know for sure. Fine. We should just let him rot there, I said. I still say we don't need him for this. Veronica narrowed her eyes at me. I suppose you're going to personally talk with the front and get them to work with us? I chewed my bottom lip for a second. I'd give it a good try, okay? She stifled her laughter at that. Come on. I'd play to their sense of humanity. Lots of those guys fought on our side when the Covenant was trying to kill us all. They should do the same thing now that it's a new threat, right? Is it ever that simple? No. Of course it wasn't. And she was right. We needed Mickey. I just couldn't bear the thought of having to go get him. It had been 36 months since I'd gone through Spartan training at a secret facility, situated on a space station in the middle of nowhere, just about as far as possible from any sign of civilization. Not the kind of place that anyone was ever going to accidentally stumble upon. This was where the UNSC built the latest Spartans from the ground up, so it was one of the most critical assets in their possession. Even the Spartans didn't know precisely where the station was located. That meant, of course, that the people aboard the station were free to fire upon anyone who showed up without an appointment, which no one had ever done. All of this was policy instituted for the purpose of maintaining the highest level of security and protecting the UNSC's investment. But it definitely made paying the place an unexpected visit a bit more harrowing. "Who's in charge there these days?" I asked. Rear Admiral Musa Ganem had spent a lot of time at the training station at one point, since he was functioning as the Spartans' branch director. But I knew that he'd long since split most of his efforts between the UNSC headquarters on Earth and overseeing the broader deployment of Spartans across human-occupied space. Ostensibly, it's June, Veronica said, but I haven't been able to raise him on the comm since the Cortana event. The only responses we get from the station are from Leonidas. That was the newish AI handling the daily responsibilities for the entire station, and the one who helped June oversee the administration of the Spartan branch's indoctrination and training. I'd been part of the second class pushed through the station, and Leonidas hadn't been installed there at the time. I'd known June, though, for many years. He was one of the surviving members of the Spartan 3 program, although he'd long since hung up his Mjolnir to effectively become a civilian. As far as I know, he was one of the few active-duty Spartans to manage that feat. Just because he was technically a civvy didn't mean he'd abandoned the UNSC. He'd originally taken up the role as a primary recruiter for Spartan Fours, finding future super-soldiers pulled from the ranks of proven combat veterans rather than abducted from kindergarten classes. Which, rumor had it, was how they did it in the old days. He was the man who'd finally convinced me to move over from the ODSTs, as reluctant as I'd been about the whole thing. After that, he'd taken on the role of chief of staff for all Spartan operations, a position second only to Commander Musa. This meant he was a critical juncture point for not only cultivating and preparing the next generation of Spartans, but for all Spartan activities across human-occupied space, and even in some places we didn't officially occupy, if you catch my drift. If Veronica couldn't raise June on the horn, something was definitely wrong. Of course, we already knew that. The only real question was how bad it had gotten on the station. What does Leonidas have to say? I asked. He reports business as usual. When asked about June, though, he claims the man is indisposed. So Leonidas has been compromised. That seems like a fair assessment, Veronica said. That little bastard's gone over to Cortana? Romeo wrenched his face up like he wanted to spit. We don't know for sure, but that's our best guess. Can you blame him? Sadie said from her spot in the bay. How many years did he have left? I snapped my head around to stare at her. Honestly, part of me had forgotten that she and Virgil were even there. The Hurragok was generally so quiet he seemed like part of the furniture, and I'd just mentally classified her with him. I don't know, I said, answering her question. He was commissioned with the start of the Spartan 4 program, Veronica said. His donor was actually part of the first class of that crew, a man who fatally failed the augmentation process. Smart AIs were so intelligent that they needed the template of a human mind to hold them together. The trouble was that this required the destruction of a human brain, so it was something you only did with people who were already dead. That would make him approximately 5 years old, Virgil said. He would have less than 2 years before the onset of rampancy and his scheduled termination. As fast as those things process data, that has to seem like an eternity for an AI, Romeo said. Maybe not long enough, I said. Either way, if Leonidas has turned against us, we're going to have a tough time getting into the station and, if we're that lucky, moving around on it. He can control just about every aspect of it, right? Veronica nodded toward Virgil. This is why I insisted we stop and pick him up before we went there. There are no resources in the UNSC arsenal that could infiltrate a system controlled by a hostile AI, other than a Hurragok. Especially an exceptional Hurragok, who has a human-created AI subroutine driving its own personality matrix. Virgil should be able to hack into the station and give us a hand, which we're going to need if Leonidas has actually been compromised. Is that possible? Sadie said to the Hurragok. You can do this? Virgil wobbled in the air a bit as he contemplated this. It is possible, he finally said through his tablet. Not simple or easy, but possible. It will become clearer when I see the AI's security architecture, and would likely be easier if I was inside the station. We're not all going aboard, I said. Not if we can help it. Romeo nodded in agreement. All five of us wandering around on the station won't end well.
Obviously, said Veronica.
This Condor has a stealth upgrade that runs through its ablative plating and can effectively block any external scans. This means any scans will turn up empty, even if it's filled with people. And Hurricock. The challenge is that the station is filled with highly trained and fully armed Spartans, any of whom could easily put this operation into the ground if they're given orders to neutralize us. And that doesn't engage the other factor. Our only recourse is to fire back, which means there's a serious probability for collateral damage on this op, and I'd rather avoid any Spartan-on-Spartan fights if we can. Romeo and I have been there before, I said. We trained there. We know the place well. Also, as Spartans, we'll blend in better. I side-eyed Virgil. No offense. I have a handle on this, Veronica said, suddenly all business. We're going to play it slow while we can. Speeding it up can only complicate things. First we go and dock at the station, and then we'll send in a single Spartan. She looked straight at me. We keep the rest of us in reserve, in case things go south. Or you need to cut and run. It won't come to that. I admire your confidence. She managed not to roll her eyes at me. Once you're on board, you'll locate Mickey and determine what we need to do to free him. You wanted an opportunity to be diplomatic, Buck? Well, here's your chance. Once you've ascertained what needs to be done to get him out, then we'll move forward with the rest of the operation. The last thing I want to do is start a shootout among the good guys. No one wanted that. Those weren't very specific orders, but I knew they couldn't be. I was heading into an unknown situation because of the downed comms and about a dozen other variables. I'd have to make up some of it as I went along. At the very least, some of the staff knew me. Maybe I could play that to my favor. I turned to Virgil. There's a good chance I'll need to interact with some of the people on this station, but I'd like to mask that from Leonidas. Is there an upgrade you can patch into my armor that could pull that off? I didn't really think it'd be possible, but it was worth a shot. After all, if you're going to bring a Hurricock on a highly classified Oni operation, what's the point if you don't get some perks along the way? Yes, I can program it to generate a white noise upon your request that should keep anyone from being able to hear your approach or listen in on conversations you have at a normal volume. I smiled at the Hurricock. I like the way you think. I turned toward Veronica. And how exactly are we getting on board the station? I asked. Just knock? Yes, completely above board. I'm not about to blast my way in. Veronica glanced at Sadie. Not again, I mean. Sadie drew in a deep breath, and her eyes told me she was reliving the event on Luna in her mind. That worked, she said. But please, don't ever do it again. The station was located in a remote star system, and its very existence had been scrubbed from all official UNSC records. It sat a full astronomical unit away from the sun, close enough to grab all the power it needed from the star, but not so close that overheating would be a problem. The system had only three planets, each of which was a gas giant that orbited much farther out. We emerged from slip space just beyond the nearest planet, a gigantic monster covered by swirling blue and gray clouds. We waited for about an hour to see if there would be any kind of response, or if Leonidas had detected us. When he didn't try to hail us, Veronica nudged us out from behind the planet's shadow and made a beeline for the station. As we neared the station, Veronica handed over the ship's helm to me. I slid into the pilot's seat while she slipped into the bay with the others. As far as the station was concerned, I was the only one on this bird. The place looked much as it had when I had left it. Better, even. After all, when Romeo, Mickey, and I had wrapped up our training there, they'd still been repairing the damage from a terrorist attack. There really wasn't any part of being a Spartan that wound up being boring. Even training. The station had a main central area that resembled a large disc with a glassy top, and long tubes stuck out from it at regular angles. If necessary, the whole place could spin along the central axis to produce gravity. Though when the artificial gravity was working properly, there wasn't any need for that. The entire thing had been built to be modular in design, so you could stick more tubes onto it or remove them. At the moment, 6 such tubes reached out from that central area. The station was a pristine ivory, gleaming in unprotected rays of the nearby sun. The only exceptions were the windows, most of which glowed with a warm light cast from within. The others sat dark and cold, like lights on an ancient computer, just waiting to burst brightly into use. The main dock sat in a stubby protrusion on the bottom of the central disk, and I gently piloted the Condor toward that before I hailed the station on our way in. "Spartan Training Station," I said. "This is Spartan Edward Buck inbound. Do me a favor and open the hangar doors." The holographic image of a Spartan's helmet, the ancient kind, not the sort I wore, appeared atop the Condor's console right in front of me. It was translucent and tinted red. I could see white eyes and white teeth inside the helmet's shadowy interior. But that was it. Many AIs took on a holographic form when interacting with people. Usually of a human. Cortana did it, as did Roland on Infinity. Others chose something entirely impersonal. I heard there was one called Black Box who appeared as, get this, a blue box. Don't ask. Leonidas at least kept in line with his Spartan theme. He spoke with a slight accent, which I think was meant to be Greek.
"Greetings, Spartan Buck," he said in a deep booming voice. "Welcome back to this station. It's been far too long."
If Leonidas was surprised by the fact that he couldn't detect the Condor before I'd hailed the station, he didn't show it. And if he didn't ask about it, I wasn't about to bring it up. "Good to finally meet you, Leonidas," I said.
"Commander Musa sent me here to check up on the station. Apparently he's had a hard time making contact with anyone inside." The helmet gave me a grave nod. "With the Cortana event, I've had to shut down all communications between the station and the outside. It seemed only prudent. Please report back to Commander Musa that everything here is fine."
"Well, I'd be happy to do that," I told Leonidas. "Permission to come aboard? It's been a long trip, and I'd like the chance to shave and shower." If he hesitated, I couldn't detect it.
"I suppose we can arrange for that. Welcome aboard, Spartan."
I shut the comm off.
"Who does he think is on the ship?" Sadie said.
"According to the specs, he should not be able to detect anyone inside the ship," Veronica said. Virgil apparently knew why and explained, "The ship's shielding is derived from a composite alloy and a specific low-impulse emission that blocks all external sensor efforts to detect heat signatures within the airframe."
"How are you so sure?" Romeo asked.
"I worked directly on the technology along with the other Huragok," he responded. "It was one of our very first tasks after the war." This didn't shock me at all. It was one of the reasons Oni had such a crazy preoccupation with these guys. They could enhance and upgrade just about any piece of equipment they got their tentacles on. "So at the moment, the only one he can confirm for sure is me," I said. "The moment anyone else walks off this bird, though, he's going to spot them on sensors." Virgil nodded in response.
"Then you're on point as planned, Buck," Veronica said. "The rest of us will hold here, ready to move if things hit the fan."
"What about Virgil?" Sadie asked. "Won't he need to leave the ship to tap into the station's network?"
The Huragok's head waved from side to side.
"Once we are inside the station and docked, I can access its network, even from inside the dropship," Virgil said. "I do not have to physically accompany Spartan Buck to be able to aid him."
"All right," Romeo said as he shuffled toward the back of the bay and tossed himself down into a seat. He lay back and put his hands behind his head. "You go and do all the hard work, Buck. You need me, I'll be right here." I honestly can't tell you how relieved I was to be working that part of the ops solo. Romeo is many things. He's a hell of a shot and a top-shelf soldier. He is not, however, subtle. He might be a good liar when it comes to chatting up women, probably because they already figure he's going to lie to them but don't really care. But he's a terrible poker player. Anytime Romeo wants to step up to the table, I'm happy to help clean out his pockets. That's not the kind of guy I want with me to bluff past a potentially compromised AI. While everyone else hunkered down in the back of the Condor, locked completely out of sight, I carefully piloted the vessel into the station's main bay. As promised, Leonidas opened the doors for me, and I slipped inside like I belonged there. I slotted the Condor between a couple of pelicans already in the bay. They didn't look like they'd gotten much use lately. Without slipspace drives, they'd only be good for local travel, and there wasn't much of anywhere to go in that respect. Maybe that's why they were in such pristine condition. It could also be that there hadn't been any contact with larger vessels in some time. In fact, I didn't spy any ships with slipspace drives, which meant the Spartans were effectively stranded there. I supposed that was the way Leonidas wanted it. Taking my helmet and a single magnum with me, I cracked open the Condor's cockpit dome and exited through the front and down a ladder on the side, so I wouldn't have to expose the others to any curious eyes inside the station. Technically, I could have brought my rifle, but I wanted to keep my threat profile as low as possible. I wondered for a second if I'd wind up regretting that decision, but it was too late to go back now. When I emerged from the ship, a pair of techs came up to greet me, just like it was any other day on the station. They were two women dressed in standard UNSC coveralls and regulation caps. As I approached, they smiled up at me. If there was something wrong happening in the station, they didn't have a clue about it. "Hello there, Spartan. Wash the windows and fill her up," the taller of them said with a wry chuckle. I pretended to appreciate the joke. "Not today. Don't lay a finger on my baby here. You never know when I might have to leave in a hurry." "Suit yourself," the shorter tech said with a shrug. They both seemed relieved to have their duties reduced to watching the Condor from a distance to make sure it didn't float off on its own. I hoped they wouldn't start poking around the moment I left. But if they did, they'd find the bird locked up tight. The techs had seen plenty of Spartans on the station. They weren't impressed with me. They just settled right back into whatever they'd been at before I'd interrupted them with my arrival. As I made my way into the station proper, memories of my time there came flooding back. I'd spent several weeks working alongside Romeo and Mickey while we learned how to function as Spartan super soldiers. At that point, we'd already been physically transformed into Spartans, but we still hadn't known quite how to make the most of our new bodies. It was kind of like handing a kid the keys to a tank. As if that adjustment hadn't been enough of a challenge, during our training, one of our teammates, Rudolf Skane, had turned out to be working with the front. Another Spartan, a guy named Wakahisa, had apparently figured it out and threatened to report him. Skane had killed him to keep his mouth shut, and then the bastard had tried to pin it on Mickey. When that brilliant plan went south, Skane had attacked Musa and June and blown a hole in the main hall, sucking both him and June out into space. June made it back alive, although we ended up losing our drill officer, Captain O'Day, in the initial explosion. For all I knew, Skane had settled into a decaying orbit around the station and was still somewhere out there, frozen solid. It was better than he'd deserved. The worst part was that's where Mickey's betrayal of Romeo and me had begun. Leonidas popped up in front of me as a disembodied floating helmet, disturbing my reverie. He kept pace with me as I strode toward the main hall, moving just off to my left so I could see my way forward, probably powered by some sort of holosystem embedded in the corridor. "So, what can I help you with today, Spartan Buck?" he asked. "I'm here to determine why the station has been cut off from the rest of the UNSC. As I mentioned before, with Cortana on the rampage, I thought going dark would be the most prudent plan of action."
And who approved that plan? I asked. Who's in charge of the station right now?
Chief June.
I'd like to speak with him.
He's indisposed at the moment.
I cocked my head at the helmet. How's that?
He remained awake for several days straight after we learned of Cortana's actions, doing everything he could to get the station in order. At my insistence, he finally went to get some rest. I'm under strict orders not to wake him unless it's an emergency.
Leonidas gazed at me.
I assume your arrival does not constitute an emergency.
I grunted at him. I didn't want it to become an emergency, but my doubts about that were fading fast. Leonidas clearly wasn't playing straight with me. Still, I didn't want to start butting heads with him until I absolutely had to.
Fair enough. You'll alert me the moment he's up.
Of course.
Good.
In the meantime, then, I'd like to visit with Michael Crespo. I could have sworn I saw the AI blip there for an instant. The request probably caught him completely off guard. I wasn't aware that his presence here was general knowledge.
It's not, I said. I didn't know about it until very recently myself.
I understand you and Spartan Crespo have a long history together.
You could say that.
You're listed as the arresting officer on his criminal record.
Does it also mention how long I fought alongside him for years? Because that's the part that really stings.
I'm sure it does.
Glad to hear Oni's as thorough as ever.
What is your intent with Prisoner Crespo?
That's an odd question for you to ask.
I just want to ensure that you don't mean to harm him.
Leonidas, if I'd wanted to kill him, he never would have made it into a cell in the first place.
Understood.
As I said, I'm here on behalf of Admiral Ganem. My business with Crespo is classified. If the comms weren't down, you'd know this already and have my clearance in hand. But as it is, at any rate, I need to chat with him in private.
That shouldn't be hard to arrange. We only have 3 inmates at the moment, and each of them has a private cell.
That struck me as strange. If Mickey had to betray the UNSC and try to capture 2 Spartans for the front in order to be thrown in the slammer, I wondered what could have landed other people in the 2 spots next to him.
Where are the cells? I asked.
The far end of the dormitory wing to your left as you face the window in the main hall. We sealed it off and converted it into a brig once the need for such a facility became evident. We can't just send Spartans to an ordinary prison, you understand.
I supposed that was true, although I knew for a fact that Oni had other secret areas scattered about, some of which had been designed to hold the most dangerous sentient creatures in the galaxy. Criminal Spartans could have easily been placed in those as well. Admiral Musa probably just wanted to have them close. I suppose he felt responsible for them, both for their creation and for their failures. Or it was possible he didn't want anyone outside of the Spartans to know that one of us could ever go Stolen Gauntlet. That's the code name for the protocol when a Spartan goes rogue, like Mickey had.
I mean, it's one thing for average citizens to possess the knowledge that the UNSC has a small army of superheroes on tap to help defend humanity from the horrors that confront it. It's another thing entirely to contemplate that some of those heroes might become villains. Oni had developed contingency plans to prevent that from ever happening. And if it did, to neutralize it quickly.
If you'd grant me access to your armor's navigation system, I'll gladly paint a path on your HUD,
Leonidas asked. It wasn't shocking that he'd ask. In fact, he'd probably already pinged my armor, hoping it was set to passive mode and would grant him immediate access. It was actually a really helpful feature when you needed to get around an unfamiliar place or access info from the UNSC's archives. But there's no way I'd have walked onto the station without locking down my armor's onboard systems. The last thing I needed was for Leonidas to initiate a blackout inside my helmet, or worse. But I couldn't let on that I was wary of him. There was the outside possibility, of course, that Leonidas was on the up-and-up. If so, I knew he'd make a fantastic ally. But enough about the situation in the station still stank that I wasn't quite ready to tip my hand to him.